"What on earth are you doing under there? You'll suffocate." It's my mother's memorable cry as she found me under the bedclothes reading James Bond by torchlight. That early reading habit bit the dust, and the rest of my childhood was spent reading on top of my bed. While summers blazed and classmates met boyfriends or did sport, I lay inert as a solar panel, soaking up Shakespeare, Dickens, Dumas, Turgenev, Maupassant, as well as Ian Fleming and Margaret Mitchell, who wrote Gone with the Wind. I'd have a go at anything, because my reading habit isn't so much about the book itself, but where I read it. You need a special place, divorced from the real world. Since the first felt like a 2'6" flying island surrounded by floorboard waves, that's the sort of place I've looked for ever since. A magical flying island, sometimes only described by the outer edge of a pool of light, but magical nonetheless. However, one day, that particular island's lease came up, and I came down with a bump. There comes a point when you're supposed to go out and earn a living. Even after 3 years at university, mainly reading lots more books, it was a big surprise. After that, reading became something in between, rather than a perfectly sufficient life support system of its own. I learned that to create this special new flying island, you need special ingredients, and you need them just as much as, say, cooking does. And the most difficult ingredient to get hold of, the most precious and underrated, is time. So once again, reading feels clandestine, a delicious, delectable affair sneaked in when I pretend that work can wait a while. No more torches, but new subterfuges. Bath time is one, though the book immersion risk should not be underestimated. Bedtime is more reliable. Its props laid out on a dry surface, the books tottering on the bedside table, the rubbish supermarket reading glasses that I'm still determined I don't need, the pillows mashed into a giant back support, the lampshade tilted just so, and the working day ended deliberately early to carve off a stolen half hour, just as you might carve a sliver of breast from a roasted chicken. Then there is the only armchair I possess, a capacious, solid, brick-brown leather one, an indestructible affair, something between a porter's chair and a trunk, with a lamp fixed above. This is where, feet up, I read proofs of my own writing, flying over the floorboards, oblivious to the telephone or the door knocker. And then, finally, there's the Tube, that underrated island, the Airbnb of readers, an anonymous haven that transforms boring journeys into keen delight, as long as you get a seat. The slender aerial walkways between these islands sometimes disappear for days, or break and must be rebuilt or bartered for, but somehow, somewhere, such an island hoves into view to fly you blissfully nearer the horizon and eternity for an hour or two.